I'll call the February 2nd Committee of the Whole meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dandrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderwoman Evans.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Here.
Alderwoman Mayer.
Here.
We have a properly noticed and quorum meeting. Please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wait until Kristen crosses her legs. Okay, we're ready to go. Item 2, Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare presentation regarding health, Healing Garden Walking Trail Chapel at South 76th. We're joined by Corinne Dickus-Johnson and Terry. Come on up. Here. Terry Schuster. It's all yours. Thanks for coming.
Wonderful. Thank you for having us. My name is Corinne Dickus-Johnson. I'm the president of the Central Market at Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare. And we are pleased to be here in front of you this evening to talk to you about the great work that we are preparing at our cancer center at Ryman on 74th and Rawson. So just quickly, if I could orient you towards what Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare, our central market has St. Francis Hospital, Franklin Hospital, which is on 27th and Ryan, Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. We have 27 medical clinics throughout our central market, and then our Ryman Cancer Center, which sits on our property over in Franklin. At the Ryman Center, we do provide comprehensive cancer care. We have outpatient chemotherapy and radiation. We have board-certified physicians, nurse navigators, our oncology nurses, therapists, genetic counselors, and other spiritual care professionals. But really our focus is holistic health care. And one of the things that we want to emphasize when we're taking care of our patients is that we understand that we're also taking care of their families, and having a healing environment is really important to that. And that's what we want to talk to you a little bit about today. The holistic approach is very important to us. It's rooted in our history from St. Francis, who really looked to nature from a restorative aspect in terms of how he converted into his life as a layperson to take care of others. And we have the same approach in that we look to our environment. Studies have shown, Johns Hopkins did a study back in 1997 that basically said that the environment has a huge impact on the care and the outcome of our patients. And one of the things that we're doing is really focusing on the environment and doing so in a holistic manner. So there's a hidden jewel that maybe most of you know about, but it's located right behind our center. If you orient yourself to the map in front of there, you'll see the Ryman Center for Cancer faces the 74th and Rawson. And then there's the Polish Center of Wisconsin. But this 36-acre land that is right behind where our center is what we're talking about. Currently, we're putting up a healing chapel, but really what we look to is this whole area where the lake, Kopmeyer Lake, I'm saying that correctly, is nestled behind the trees and the forest, and it's a place where we want to be able to share with the community. The Conservancy for Healing and Heritage has really been looking at a partnership between the Polish Center and Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare, and this has been really work that's been in play for about 10 years. It's a beautiful area where we know that it's got surrounded by woods that will not only provide a place of respite for our patients, but we also want to be able to share this with the community. So through fundraising work with the Conservancy, we will be adding a healing garden and a walking trail around the 37-acre piece of land. We're currently doing the surveying right now for the trails. What this shows you is a recent photo. It was just taken last week. That is the chapel. It's a pretty rudimentary chapel, but it is designed from the old Polish chapels in Poland, and so it fits perfectly within the space. It will not have heat, but it will have electricity. And as appropriate based on whether we see this as a place where our patients can come in and spend time prior to their treatments or after their treatments and be able to be in nature. We've been able to put the chapel, the construction in place through a very generous donation from the Rymans, and they too are very much committed to creating a healing, holistic approach to healthcare. Again, these are just some more photos of the peaks and the glass. We really welcome you to come in and see what the chapel is looking like. It's beautiful. It's even in the winter time with the snow, but we expect that when we start to see those trees populate with all of the leaves, it too will truly will be magnificent. We have some great things planned for the community. We will be having a ribbon cutting for the chapel, as well as some groundbreaking for the trails. But we really want this to be a place where the community can come and enjoy the acreage, both in terms of the trails, the beauty of the lake, and the chapel. We're planning currently a fundraiser, a kayak race across the lake. So more information about that. But the truth of the matter is this is a great opportunity for us to continue to share with the community. You've probably heard our advertisement about keeping our community stronger, healthier, better. This is just another way that Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare, in partnership with the Polish Center and the Conservancy, can do that, and making sure that we have a beautiful place for families to come as well as our patients. And this is just some rendering that's where the current building is. Obviously, the trails are not in place, but this will be a place where we'll be able to have patients go as well as the community come and spend the day. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Before we do that, Corinne, I just want to thank you and Terry for the great support for the mayor's fitness challenge. Without you, we couldn't have done it. And I got to tell everybody in the weight loss, I was off by 0.2%. got beat by Scafidi. But if we did gross amount, I'd be okay. And I'm not giving anybody any numbers because everybody can do algebra. Questions for Corinne? Terry. Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, it's a great project, and I appreciate you being able to have that open up to the public. One thing you had mentioned was you were currently doing your surveys for the trails, and I'm wondering if you could wait until the actual ground layer is coming up so you're not putting the trail on top of the most important features that are there. As you probably know, this is one of, I think, only four natural lakes in all of Milwaukee County, and so it's really unique, not only to Franklin, but to the entire southeast of Wisconsin. It's also, I believe, one of the deepest, and it's spring-fed.
Correct.
So yeah. It's going to be quite cold for your kayaking, so be prepared for that. And I don't know how you're going to handle the launching with the habitat or any of that, or if you'll have the trails in by then, or how you plan on.
I don't have that information, but we'd be happy to provide that to you in terms of the timing of that. That'd be great.
My name is Mike Murray. I'm chairman of the Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare System and also chairman of the Conservancy. So there's this little bit of a thing.
You've got a relationship with the Polish Center, too.
Yes, and a relationship with the Polish Center. So some of you understand that this has been going on for quite some time. And the concept of this came back in the year 2000. So there's been a lot of planning taking place and a lot of conversation with the DNR, the Army Corps of Engineers, and so forth, and also on the fundraising side. And the launching really of this whole project, to really get it started, came with the Rymans, with the chapel. Now we are in the midst of fundraising. You may have seen some of that, those advertisements in the Franklin paper. Ran in December, I think, six times. So we're in the midst of that. We're raising the money for the trails. In terms of the surveys, the Zimmerman Group, our working on the surveys both for the trails and for the healing garden. And in addressing your concern, Alderman, we have we're working with the DNR to make sure that with the surveys to make sure that we're surveying properly the wetlands and we stay away from some of the plants and that are in there that are quite unusual, and also you know, the roots of some of those trees. We have to be very careful when we lay out the trails because they're going to be doing some cutting in there. So we're going to be very mindful of what's going on there. In terms of the launching, this kayak business just came up recently because one of our one of the people that work for the Conservancy also run she runs an event called the Banderdinker, which is a kayak type of race, and it's what it is a fundraiser for the trails, but it's to bring the public to the site, because believe it or not, there are a lot of people in Franklin that have no idea that there's a lake there, okay? And so they don't know what kind of asset that's there. So we want to bring attention to the project and bring attention to the fact that this is in Franklin and it's going to be open to the public as far as the trails are concerned. So we're very mindful of your concerns. And we won't be really cutting or doing anything until we understand the trails, until we understand what we've got as far as the foliage, the vegetation, and that type of thing. So, does that answer your question?
It did. It didn't really give me a time frame as to when, you know, things like the special concern trillium that are in there come up in the spring, if you're surveying now, and how that would address. I understand you're working with the DNR and the wetland issues, but the spring ephemerals will only be up in the spring. So any planning prior to that, if you haven't done any surveying since 2000 for placement, really, unless they're up out of the ground in the spring, it would be you wouldn't be able to do that right now.
No, we're absolutely all we're doing is we're required. In fact, we just spent $50,000 to get all the permits, all the survey work type done, both for the healing garden and for the trails. So we won't be doing anything. We're, again, very mindful of the vegetation there and those types of plants. And we won't be doing anything, doing any cutting of trails or anything like that until such time as we know what we're doing. So the Zimmerman group, we've been working with the Zimmerman group. They understand just exactly what the concerns are. And so we will we'll make sure that we're not being harmful to that environment.
Right. I'm sure there's plenty of degraded areas where you can put the trails and certain things that will save you more work or less work in the long run if you're putting your facilities on top of the degraded areas and then you don't have to try to restore it.
Yeah, the original trail layout, understand when we did that original trail layout was very early in this process, very early in the planning.
You and I talked
many years ago
about this. We've talked in the last few years.
Sure, exactly. So, we're not going to do anything that certainly will harm that. But and so everybody, including Platt Construction, people who are construction managers here, we have multiple meetings. I'll be meeting with them again tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock just to talk about these type of things.
Well, if you could share, I know John Gerda is on your board. Gerda and I have had a mutual friend who just passed away, and John wrote a very nice write-up for his funeral.
Sure.
And one of the things that this mutual friend said, Richard, he said, you know, could you keep up on this, follow along? This is an area he's inventoried for 25, 30 years. And he really respected John and just asked him to. So I told him, you know, before he passed away, that I would make sure and make his voice be heard. And And he said he had his inventory. He would be happy to share. That would be helpful to
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I just had a conversation with John. He thought he might be able to be here, but he has another obligation. So I said, well, my mom was his den mother in Cub Scouts. So we go way back, John and I. So.
Thank you.
I'm really pleased, Mr. Murray, that you're part of this effort. And thanks for continuing the community. I appreciate it. So.
Well, it is. I live in Hayward now, and so it's a 342-mile drive down here. But I have a lot of business here, and as chair of the Wheaton Franciscan System, I have a lot of connection, and I want to see this through. Because this, again, 2000, the concept came up in 2000, and we've got to get it done.
So we got Alderwoman Evans and then Alderman Mayer.
This is a wonderful project, and thank you so much, and to the Rymans especially. The chapel, I have someone in my family who utilizes the cancer center, and it's very nice. Is the chapel always going to be unheated, or are there plans ever in the future to heat that?
Right now, the plans are to keep it that it will not have heat.
Is that just to keep it natural? You know.
Well, there was also a cost aspect to it, but yes, natural in the upkeep. So Wheaton Franciscan is taking on the responsibility for maintaining the chapel, and so that's what our current plans are.
I just know that patients who have these concerns they're always cold. So
yes.
It doesn't matter what time of year, so I was just wondering. Thank you.
Well, we had some consultation with the people at the Rymans Center, and the issue would be taking them out during the wintertime and getting them from the cancer center itself, to the chapel. A lot of these individuals, a lot of these patients are in wheelchairs, so it would be very, very difficult. We're going to have to kind of play this by ear and to see if there's a lot of demand for this. Certainly we can make some changes. It would be very, very easy to heat the chapel if we find that there's going to be a lot of use during that period, during the cold period.
So. It will have electricity, so if plans changed, electrical heat or something of that nature would be feasible.
Thank you.
Alderman Mayer.
It's interesting that you're from Hayward, because this is a little bit of Hayward right here in Milwaukee County. For those of you that haven't seen this, for those of you that haven't seen this, it is really a beautiful area. When I was growing up, this was known as Schaefer's Lake. Jerry Schaefer, our DPW superintendent, lived on the farm that oversaw this entire area. So it's a beautiful area, so I'm really happy to see that it's going to be preserved. My question is, how is it going to be open to the public? Is it going to be open access 24/7? Is there going to be parking?
Well,
go ahead.
It will be open 24/7. Obviously, we're going to be responsible for the upkeep, and their parking that's there would be on our lot that's
okay.
Contiguous. So we would have to, you know, think through those in terms of how we would open it up. And there are also some rules as it relates to how Lake is used, because it is a conservancy, so there are some special use processes. We can't just open it up the lake to anybody. So we'll have to, as we continue to work on how we're going to advertise the use of this particular land, we'll have to think through the parking aspect of it.
Now, between you and the Polish Center and the apartments, do you control access to the entire lake?
That's correct. Yeah,
okay.
We have access all the way around the lake. So the trails, the interesting part will be, and the more expensive part will be, that pretty much the western edge of the lake, and then where the apartments are, and then portion of the eastern will all have to be raised, trails, wooden trails. And so there'll be some issues there, but we have permission, and we have access, and we own that entire circumference. So.
Thank you.
just one point on that. You may want to touch base with the police chief and the fire chief. I need to make a phone call first, but because we don't want getting access across those bridges. Got a bike officer here. He'll handle that, but well, maybe not. Well, okay. Access for the fire, for rescue, and police for patrolling. They just may want to chat with you about that.
Sure.
Right. Alderman Schmidt.
I would just like to congratulate the Rymans and Wheaton Franciscan for collaborating on this effort. I know it's been a long haul getting to this point, but I think it'll be a tremendous asset to the community, and we look forward to what you bring to the people in the healing process and to the community. So, thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Well, given the fundraising that's going on for the trails now, the fact that the chapel was paid for and almost finished as far as construction is concerned, we're looking for, and we're talking to a number of people now to name for a $250,000 contribution to name the healing garden. So that's the only thing that we have left to complete this whole project. But it will be, we will have a groundbreaking in May along with the ribbon cutting for the chapel for the healing garden. So it's been a long road since 2000.
Alderman Wilhelm.
I know your focus isn't necessarily on the maintenance of the area until you get some of your other facilities and fundraising going, but right now there are at least three grants out there for maintenance that are available. Some of them have some pretty tight deadlines, but probably this would be a perfect project for us. A lot of these water grants, and the EPA is really focused on the Great Lakes and water quality right now. So the habitat alone and the fact that that's one of those four natural lakes, you'd be a shoo-in for almost any maintenance grant out there, I would think.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the information.
Yeah. Anyone else? Go forth and heal.
Thank you, and thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Corinne. Good job, Terry. Okay, item three, concept review for a proposed bowling center, sports bar, and banquet hall at approximately 7220 West Rawson Avenue. David Church is the applicant. Mr. Dietl.
Mr. Church is here.
Yes.
If you have any questions, you can sit up there.
In your packet, there's a write-up.
Yep. I don't have too much more to add. He's here to answer any questions, get some feedback from the council. As the materials in the packet mentioned, he's envisioning running the business pretty much as it was before, proposing to make some interior changes and repairs, not envisioning at this point in time too many exterior changes, possibly more substantial changes or improvements later down the road. It's zoned B2 for business. It's permitted use, although if the bar component would ever become the major component of this project, that would probably be a special use, but everything else would be a permitted use in there.
Great. Welcome, Mr. Church. Good to meet you in person.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to add before you take comments from the audience?
Certainly. I appreciate everybody's time. I'm a local business person. My primary background is in commercial real estate investment and development, in addition to restaurant, hospitality, operations, ownership, and management in that industry. As a consumer, I'm very familiar with this property. I live in the area. I'm not in Franklin, but very close. And pardon me. Oh, yeah. Strike. There's not a Austin Powers eject seat there, I hope. But I'm very familiar with the property as a consumer, so very much a lot of experience in understanding how that business operated in terms of the community involvement, the community participation that took place there, as well as what I would call a slight lack in reinvestment in that business as well, which in my opinion really did not maximize the potential of that facility. And certainly as time has gone on, the developments and the business progression that's taken place in the community just adds into my belief that that really is a tremendous diamond in the rough. And there's a tremendous opportunity there to reinvigorate that property, that facility, as a key component or an important component of the community that will see a tremendous amount of support from everything that included very popular volleyball leagues out there that receive 250, 300 teams participating there every year. The 16-lane bowling facility was always a very popular bowling house in the community. The banquet hall, I've participated in many events there, but certainly friends of mine who are very in tune with the history, say recent history of 20 years in the community, everything from civic functions, fundraisers, to youth sports groups and banquet facilities, that was a very, very popular place. And I'm very excited about the opportunity that is in front of us, in front of me. You may or may not know that the property is currently in foreclosure. The previous ownership group that owned it for 21 or 2 years, they closed fairly abruptly approximately 18 months ago, and more recently, through unsuccessful efforts to sell the property through a brokerage firm, the lender took the property back and has been fielding offers in different proposals, and I was successful in gaining control of the property. So at this point, I do not own the property. I am very close to wanting to move forward there in terms of waiving all of my due diligence. I performed a tremendous amount of due diligence from everything from any environmental, potential environmental issues, which there does not appear to be any, to full and comprehensive inventory of the condition of the property from the mechanicals on the roof to the parking lot. So I'm very close to being prepared to move forward. I'm doing the best I can to find out how the city is going to feel about that property. And my intent specific to the property is to really not change the business model, which I think was a successful business model, kind of despite the previous ownership's kind of autopilot approach that they had there. I think with a significant investment in the entire property, perhaps initially slightly more weighted to the interior, it needs a cosmetic overhaul. Everything from ceiling tiles to carpeting, drywall, lighting schemes, relaminating, resurfacing new countertops everywhere, to really bring it into a very contemporary state that would be a welcome addition and a facility that I think would be very much supported by the community. Everything from the volleyball to the bowling leagues to I think there's a significant opportunity to create and offer a very comprehensive, I'll call it pub dining opportunity there with the sports pub area of the business. So we're looking to offer a high quality pub food, casual dining, and from what everybody tells me that is in the community, that there's a pretty significant lack of options, certainly around the 76th and Rawson corridor and perhaps in Franklin in general. So I'm very optimistic and confident that will be supported as long as we create the right environment, which I'm confident that we will. So I think in a nutshell, I'm looking at further due diligence makes me believe that there's an opportunity to do some things initially to the exterior of the building that will enhance its appearance, and depending on how a few things shake out, but I would certainly make the commitment to the city that I'm on board as a real estate investor developer looking to create value in that property. Again, this is an investment for me, and it's very important to create value, not only the business, the ongoing business concern there, but the real estate as well. And in order to do that, there's going to have to be a reasonable, just very very vague, a reasonable attempt to upgrade the look of that facility to bring it into more contemporary status and in line with the architectural controls and things that are in place in that corridor. So I'm definitely aware of that, the importance of that, and not only from my standpoint, but perhaps from the city's standpoint as well. 40 to 50 jobs. We plan to be open 11 a.m. until 1 or 2 p.m., 7 days a week. And I think that's mostly it. So I'm happy to do my best to answer questions.
The purpose of the concept review is to let the Common Council take a look at what may be coming down the pipe and offer them an opportunity to give you very high-level opinions of their initial reactions. We don't take a vote here. We can't take a vote, and we won't take a vote. But you'll get a sense of
sure.
where people are from the conversations. Now, you and I had a conversation on the phone earlier, so you're aware of my rather frank comments. They weren't harsh, though, about the exterior of the building, and other than that, I'm looking for the council for comments. Alderman Wilhelm, we're going to change this one of these days. Get somebody else first.
Go ahead. Call anyone you want. Third's got a hand up. First thing that came to mind when some of the constituents were hearing about this, when it came out on the agenda, can they look forward to anything on an expanded menu? Notice the appetizers and pizza. And there's always been a huge cry for more dining locally. Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. The goal, this is my opinion in terms of my straw poll or just assessment of what people in the community are saying, because I know a lot of people in Franklin, and I feel like they're a good assessment or a good testament of what the community could be needed in the community. And I think an opportunity with that facility is very much has to do with the dining option or the dining potential there. As a consumer, I mean, that facility, I don't think they ever had a menu. I thought their pizza was easy to please, but I thought the pizza was a respectable pizza. There's a balance in. I wouldn't anticipate anything that would look gourmet-ish or maybe P.F. Chang's-ish, but I anticipate being able to provide a very high quality casual dining menu that would include everything from burgers and sandwiches and wraps, salads. Have to evaluate Friday fish fry, but a high quality pizza as well. Those things are still under what the menu will look like exactly would still be under review. But I am very, very committed, and I believe that that's where a huge part of the opportunity exists, is to make as much of that facility a dining option for the community. And But there's a balance to how much you can do there. So
right. I guess Bill Worker can help you with, equipment that's necessary
right.
to keep that up. And if you're doing this in other places, you probably
aren't right.
aware of that. But I know we've had other places that have tried to expand their menus without expanding their kitchen facilities, and they've kind of ran into some problems. So I encourage that closeness working with the health department on those issues. And,
okay.
I really like the idea where it's going. I guess I agree with the mayor's comment about some exterior needs as well, and hopefully you'll be able to get some of that with the funding you have. And I think it's great. It's glad the project's getting some news. And looking forward to it.
Alderwoman Evans, then Alderman Schmidt.
You threw me off with the P.F. Chang's because you said Irish. In here, so so is it going to have an Irish theme? Or
I'm expressing right now my personal preference, my vision for it, and I don't know how familiar
it's your
everybody.
Mommy day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I'll have a fiduciary responsibility to a few people. So my vision is, to the extent that you're familiar with this property, is the middle section, which I'll call the sports bar. That portion of the building was just sorely, sorely underutilized. And I envision that to have what I will call an Irish pub look or feel. darker woods, a combination of booths, high top tables, new countertops, or I'm looking to find the most economical way to achieve that look without having to rip the bar out, for example. So we'll be providing a new facade or an exterior to the bar that'll have a darker wood finish. And I think the combination of those things will, in my mind, is what would make it look more like a pub, if we want to call it an Irish pub. I'm a TV guy. There'll be no lack of televisions and viewing options. Comprehensive and selective beverage choices will be available. So I think that's what I meant by an Irish pub look and feel. It's mainly that darker wood, more rich-looking wood, all new furniture, booths, tables, flooring, ceiling tiles. It'll be drywall where necessary. So you'll walk in from the minute you see it, even if the initial exterior improvements, to whatever extent we achieve those initially, I think the community will or consumers will realize from the minute they pull into the parking lot to the minute they walk into the building that it's been completely remodeled and upgraded from, again, the lighting to the carpeting to all of the trim and everything in the building. It has to look that way, in my opinion.
Well, we do need another place for sports banquets and a meeting place. And I know we do utilize Tuckaway Country Club, which they cater the meals there, you know, provide the meals. Right. So I'm glad you're coming to Franklin, but I also agree that, and I understand the fiscal impact, but the sooner the better for the outside.
The community can provide would be very much appreciated.
That would be coming to your establishment.
Okay. That'll work.
Yeah. Alderman Schmidt, then Alderman Mayer, then Alderman Dandria, then Alderwoman Mayer.
You kind of touched on what I was going to relate to, the discussion of the what was the existing sports bar and turning that in more into the pub grill type atmosphere that really hadn't been utilized more, which is sandwiched in between the lanes and the concourse on one side of the wall and what was the traditional banquet hall out in the front. So this would be in the middle. And you would be using that other entrance to the east as a main entrance then to this grill that hadn't really been used before.
Correct. Certainly there's multiple points of access into the property. The idea, I'm not certain if the Root River name will move forward. I haven't. It's been a fairly short time period to figure all this out with the seller. Wanted me to perform very quickly. So, certainly the goal will be to have the sports pub and grill stand on its own merits as a dining, entertainment, sports watch viewing part of the business, and we're going to look to market that. It will definitely, whether it's Root River or not, the sports pub will be named and identified differently than the entertainment center as a whole. And part of that will be to provide some sort of unique identification over that east entrance with a canopy, with something that would identify that entrance into the sports pub and grill.
What's your primary business is bowling?
The primary business is bowling, for sure.
My understanding is if this deal proceeds, your goal is at least to want to be open in time to start attracting volleyball leagues for the summer or May or June to get the business off the ground?
Yes. We didn't touch on timing. I'm pretty firm in my belief that as close to the beginning of May as I can get the business open, the better it will be. I mean, volleyball, again, 8 volleyball courts that were very well patronized at its peak, 250 to 300 teams between summer and fall volleyball. And I'm confident once it's announced and becomes more publicly known that Root River could be reopening, that there will be a significant demand for those volleyball courts. And that season typically starts in the beginning of May, the first week or two in May. Now, I understand that could be a tall order to have this go through the process, but certainly the goal is going to be once, let's just say, the green light comes on to fast-track this as best as possible, to get open as quickly as possible, you know, without sacrificing any of the, you know, the things to do to make it right.
Do you feel confident that the bowling operation would be ready to go into full tilt by September, or is that obviously bringing back leagues, having been involved in bowling for most of my life, once the leagues are dispersed, it is really hard to bring them back. Hopefully having the volleyball attraction will bring back people who used to bowl there and help bring them back into the business for bowling in the fall. Is that something that you're projecting for September, that you'll be able to have some startup leagues going then on the lanes?
Absolutely. The good news is, from a bowling perspective, the equipment was maintained very well throughout the years, even though it's been dormant for the last 18 months. So from an equipment standpoint, I think we can satisfy, without claiming to be a bowling expert, as you may be, Doug. The bowling facilities, from an equipment standpoint, will be in fantastic working order and condition. From a marketing standpoint, I'm confident that the combination of the Root River's historical success and patronage from the bowling community will help attract those bowlers again. And then I'm also looking to engage, either from a consulting standpoint or an actual employee standpoint, people that are very, very, very experienced and connected in the bowling community, who will be key to help driving that bowling business this year. So let's just say I take ownership March 1st. You know, we'll be marketing the bowling scenario probably in February or in a few weeks.
Obviously, the bowling trade has evolved in the last decade or two. You're looking at expanding into more of the moonlight bowling, the glow bowling, rock and bowl type of atmosphere to attract the younger generations that seem to appeal that as a way of form of entertainment in the evenings, on weekends especially. Is that something?
The younger kids, like I'm getting, I'm closer to 50 than 40 now, so the younger kids are 30. I know. I could talk about, you know, the opportunity and the underutilization of the facility, but my plan is, so I mentioned the bowling equipment itself is in great shape. My plan is to upgrade all the bowling equipment area, the bowling aesthetics as well, from the graphics that are right above the pins to new monitors, new scoring system, new furniture that'll be more conducive for open play bowling, if you will. I'm looking to find the right balance to upgrade that furniture level, to have tables and places for people to dine and socialize down by the lanes, which is typically where people want to be, that will appeal to the league bowler, but yet be very appealing and a contemporary look and feel for the open player, or social bowler. So we'll be looking to do things, everything from corporate events, if those opportunities present themselves, to a robust, we'll call it moonlight or glow light bowling that is very popular at a lot of facilities around town, to just getting a lot of the target clientele to consider Root River Center as an option for a night out, a place that they know they can get a high quality sandwich or salad or pizza. The aesthetics are very pleasing. It's clean. I am very much a believer in cleanliness above all, and you know, it's great service, great atmosphere, great food and drink offering, and execute that with a high level of service is what the vision is, and certainly the execution is more challenging, but that is the plan for the bowling center's bowling area as well. So everything from the bar will look like a new bar, to the carpeting, to the bowling
the
bowling
masking units.
Alderman Mayor.
I'll bring up the rear. You can go with Mark and Suzanne first.
Alderman Dandrea.
Well, David, it's good opportunity to look at someone wanting to purchase a building that's very tired. One of my concerns is that you and your group has enough assets to be able to fulfill your dreams of what you want to do with this building inside. That's one thing that we don't do on the board is concerned about that. We're concerned about the impact on the community. But the last thing we want to do is have someone come into a business because they're getting a deal for it and not be able to fulfill and accomplish what they want to do. And so we're assuming that the performance, the protocol that you, all the work that you've done, granted you're moving forward, you've got an offer, it's contingent upon probably the city of Franklin approving and moving forward with your projected plan for an existing building that has this concept. And you're aware the bowling industry has been on a relatively decline in league bowling. Open bowling, it's kind of faddish, but if you market to the right people, yes, it can work. One area that I know other bowling areas or centers have had is being able to create a buffer so you don't have that constant bowling noise when people are dining. So you've got the bar, and then what do you, is there going to be enough separation where you're going to be able to muffle or buffer some of that bowling sound that comes from the center portion of it? That's what I'd be looking at, because looking at bowling centers, and I can put on my lender hat looking at the mix of how much, or granted, you can make the center and the lanes and the equipment are all paid for, so as that's generating money, that's great. And your food costs, granted, we're concerned that you're going to have a mix, and then you're going to also have are you going to have parking, adequate parking, to be able to handle the anticipated crowds that you're going to have there. Those would be some of my comments. I mean, I know that it appears that you have ample parking, but once that parking lot gets full, with all the different venues that you've got going on, are you going to, you're going to be able to, you're going to be able to handle that business? Those are my concerns.
I think I processed most of what you said. I mean, is there everything from my financial capability to parking? Is there specifically, I guess you want to go back and have me address what portion of those? And I'm happy to do so.
Well, you can assure me that you've got the financials or the financial backing with your partnership that it appears that you're going to have out there, that you're going to be able to support and continue to support this project. It looks like the outside of the project, you're not going to put a lot of attention on it until month two or year two. Is that a correct assumption?
Not necessarily. What I know as much as anything is the lessons that I've learned in 20 years of owning and operating multi-million dollar businesses is that all of us, I'm getting into this because I believe there's an opportunity. I believe there's long-term viability to this business, to that facility and property. And what I know as well as anybody, I believe on a small business person's level, is that my financing structure, my basis of what I'm paying to get into a business, where that needs to be in relation to the sales projections and the stress-tested, I'll call them sales projections, that would be not pie-in-the-sky scenarios, but then even pulling back on those sales projections to see how the business would perform under my proposed debt structure. And I'm highly confident, knowing the historical success that this property, this business experienced, I'm going to say with a complete autopilot, the sales volumes that it experienced, and the basis that I'm getting into it for combined with the investment, the significant investment in the property, that I'm very, very, very confident that it's poised for long-term success. So I'm highly confident in my financial capabilities and the ability to support the project if sales fall to 50% of what my projections are. And again, a lot of that has to do with because I'm of the quality basis, I'll say the low basis that I'm getting it for. This isn't something that I'm looking at as a lot of people were with the lender. As soon as they hear bank-owned or REO, the tire kickers and the lowballers come in, and I can assure you that I was competing with a few people that were buying for this property and confident that that I put forward a good offer that still put the project in great position to be successful long term. So I know you're not here to look through my financials or ask me my ownership structure at this point, but so historically that property, I believe there's 280 parking stalls there. It's a 23,500 square foot facility. So you had over 10 stalls per thousand there, and I can speak as a consumer who's been there on the busiest night of volleyball, which is Thursday night, combined with a gun show or some sort of bank thing that's going on in the banquet hall to the activity that's going on in the sports pub area. And parking was full, but there were always spots available. So that's a very, very healthy parking ratio. That's movie theater ratios. So I'm confident that the parking should be ample.
Okay.
There.
And your intentions are is to keep this long term then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Relative to the proposed investment in the facility, the majority of to make the business successful, I think, needs to take place to the interior. There's a significant amount of investment to take place there. But going back to just making sure that we get into this to not be sitting here with somebody else 2 years from now because this didn't work because I way overpaid, I think you have to find, I'm looking for the right balance to do initially to the exterior with the initial funding of the project to what portion of operating revenues profits can go to making improvements, let's just say in year two. But I would be certainly open to stipulating certain things moving forward.
And most of the most successful bowling houses are owner occupied and owner operated, and so we are looking at the person that's going to be the owner operator of the site.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Yes.
I just remind the council the staff conclusion on page 2 of the report is that this is a permitted use in that zoning district. And actually, Mr. Church is here because he's a nice guy and wanted some input. This is a staff decision, provided that the use remains primarily as a bowling alley. So, Alderwoman Mayer.
I have a few questions. I'm looking at this project that it would be a very long-term viable business, and I agree with you on that. I have a question regarding the amount of money that you're estimating that the total upgrades would cost. How much of that is something that is going in right away to open in May?
The entire budget.
Okay, so that's the whole entire thing is?
Correct.
Okay, and then in year two, then you would invest more for improvements
to the exterior. Correct.
There was a, within the last year, another business that wanted to go in there. Joel, I just have a question. If you've talked with Mr. Church about this, the things that were required of that other business for the exterior, is that something that is required?
We're not sure. the other use was going to be a special use at best, maybe even a rezoning. A more substantial change gives us more opportunities to suggest, recommend, or require additional improvements to the property. If he's proposing a permitted use, not proposing many exterior changes, we're not going to be able to push that envelope as much. So those things that are most serious from a building safety or building code standpoint will be required, of course, by building inspection. Anything above and beyond that from aesthetics and appearance, again, it's going to be a pretty site-specific process, depending, like, for instance, you know, the parking lot improvements, holes, anything that would have that safety issue, of course, we staff will recommend that be done as part of any zoning compliance if that's what he needs. Any damage to the exterior walls, that kind of stuff, yes. But, you know, adding on a more decorative entrance feature, adding on an addition to the building, those are probably beyond what we would be able to do in a zoning compliance.
Okay. I can kind of see the divide between what, I'll just say myself, would want to see for the exterior of that building compared to what you probably want to see for the exterior of the building. How would we as a council be able to, you can't say guarantee, but have that expectation that it's going to be better looking by year two?
Let me help you with that.
Thank you.
Please, if I may. Joel, is there any method to condition a zoning compliance certificate?
Standard practice to do so. But again, reasonably is what the guidance is. UDO, as detailed and specific as it often gets, not in this case.
But we'll talk about that later.
Clearly, over the years, over the decades, reasonableness, yes. So reasonably related to what they're proposing to do, yes, we have before imposed conditions.
Thank you. Alderwoman Mayer still has four.
With the $600,000, you've had multiple bids for what you feel is required to go into this?
I am very confident that number will allow me to achieve a very high level of upgrade to the facility at the most economical price.
Okay. And then as far as, you're saying, you're talking about a lot about yourself and your feelings into this, but you did mention something about having somebody else in this, so you will have investors?
There will be an ownership group that I will be the president of, if you will.
Okay, will they have any ownership in it, or, well, it's obviously an ownership group, but will they have any direct ownership in the business, the daily things that go on and that kind of thing, or are they just investors?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two parts to that question, ownership and responsibilities. Certainly any in a group could be two people, it could be, you know, five or six. So there will be complete vested personal responsibility in every aspect of this redevelopment, if you will, or this repositioning, reopening of the building. So I think the short answer is yes, my partners and I will be joined at the hip from a personal responsibility standpoint. However, the majority of the obligation to drive operational success and to fulfill to maximize the potential of this property will fall on my shoulders.
Okay.
With significant support, but again, I will be the primary person to execute.
Okay. Will any of those investors have the restaurant experience or bowling experience or anything like that?
My investor partners are very successful business people in all aspects of business, very well-known people in the community. So there's a lot of excitement with some very capable, again, well-known people in the community that I'm partnering with to do this.
Okay, and then what size is the banquet hall?
The actual square footage is approximately 4,000 square feet, 225 person comfortable capacity.
Okay, because with the hotel there now,
yes,
built and opening soon, or weddings could possibly be,
yeah,
a venue. Is the elegance or the contemporary look of that room going to be something where people would want to hold weddings?
Well, I guess I would leave that open to the council's interpretation or perception of, you know, what a nice place is and what, you know, what you'd consider a quality facility to hold your wedding celebration. But I'm confident that the upgrade to that portion of the business will promote itself and lend itself to everything from end of the year sports banquets for all the Franklin Sabre youth teams to quinceañeras for the community to weddings, fundraisers, trade shows. So it's going to be, like I said, I'd leave that up to your interpretation of, where you'd want to have your wedding reception. But I'm confident that it will be very well appointed and very clean.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, if the carpet gets replaced and the ceiling tiles go away, Mr. City Attorney.
Just with regard to what conditions might appear on a zoning compliance permit, a zoning compliance permit is just that. Property has to comply with all the provisions of the code. That's the UDO zoning code, as well as any applicable municipal code, such as the sign code, fire prevention code. That's it.
And striping parking lot, providing handicap accessibility. Those are the kinds that we often have as conditions.
But it's got to be in the code, right? Not just something somebody thinks is reasonable.
Alderman Mayer, then Alderwoman Wilhelm.
It just boggles my mind that a business that seems so successful one day can be closed and padlocked the next day. I don't know what happened there, but I welcome you. I think it's great. I like the idea of keeping it going as the same, basically the same as it was, with the improvements that you're talking about. So I really welcome it. My only question is, will you allow scouts to have bake sales or hot dog sales on Saturdays, or would you allow the high school pom-pom girls to do a car wash in the parking lot kind of thing?
Does my council with me? I don't know, is there a political implication to this question? Boy Scouts, I think, are they in the
Boy
news?
Or
my position on Boy Scouts, I don't know. My vision is to have the Root River Entertainment Center be a very strong community partner.
Good answer.
In previous businesses that I've owned, I've been a prominent, did a lot of partnerships and donations and offering everything from meeting space to the parking lot to, I just think that's good business. So my answer is I don't think it's very ingenious or intuitive necessarily to say that Root River is got a longstanding business history in the community, and I just want to elevate that in reaching out to the community, being more proactive to the school district, the school systems, the youth sports teams. My kids are still very active in that, so I get the need in many communities for those types of events and places. So I have to do a great job to upgrade the facility and be a strong community partner.
Good. Thank you.
Alderman Wilhelm, and then let's wrap it up.
Well, like you, I want this to be successful. I think the answer to the question might be, in part, insurance for you would be, if you can host those type of events, your insurance probably has a little bit of say on some of those events. But I appreciate your hands-on approach. I think your answers have been very upfront, and it seems like you've taken a lot of this on your own, so it seems like that would be a good fit for this project. But one thing I'd like you to do is I want to have you encourage your contractors, your ownership group, yourself, and everyone to work closely with our health department, and not necessarily just comply. I want them to also help you. And so I would like the mayor and myself and all of us up here, including the district alderperson, if you have concerns that any of your contractors, employees, yourself included, are not afraid to come forward and say, we need to sit down, I'm having a little bit of a problem. Instead of what I typically hear from developers is, well, I'm afraid to stir the pot because then they might be tougher on me. I'd like to change that whole attitude, and I think this is a really good place to start with your project. So I welcome that. I'm available. I welcome the mayor to sit down and do that as much as possible, and when he's not around, I'll certainly step up to the plate.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Best I know is all of our contractors are happy. They just have items to talk to the mayor about. And I do take that phone call by Mark. Okay, so as a matter of business, this was on here so that the planning and zoning administrator could get a feel for the common council. He has such, and the rest of the business is between the two of them. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 4, FAPSU update. Who's going to do that? Bill? Is that you?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Members of the Common Council, Mayor Olson, tonight the members from FAPSU, Franklin Area Parents and Students United, would like to give you a historical overview of what they've been accomplishing over the past 4 years. I'm standing here before you instead of Kathy Hahn, so you got the B team. But really, FAPSU is primarily citizens, residents of the community, wanting Franklin to be a healthy, wholesome community for its family members. Behind the scenes, they've been active for 4 years. The health department has supported their activities, as has the police department, and we're just hoping tonight to have a discussion and to solidify some of those relationships.
Well, I got to tell you, when I meet with some of my friends who've known me for many years, they like to joke with me a little bit, and they always ask me where my security detail is. Well, now I can tell them. They're with FAPSU. So whoever wants to speak, give us name and address, and let us have it.
My name is Mark Finney. I've been a member of the Franklin Area Parents Students United group since 2010. We're entering our sixth year, and I believe we really have worked very hard, as Bill said, as organizations within the Franklin community, the health department, the police department, the school district, others as well, Aurora and Wheaton Franciscan Health Centers in particular. We continue to grow, and what we want to do tonight is just bring you up to date on some of the things that have happened over the last few years that we're doing now that we're very active in and proud of. In essence, FAPSU is simply an organization, a community service, really, to with the goal of all our collective goal to reduce alcohol and drug abuse amongst our kids. And that's done through education support. Some of the things that we've been involved with since we've last spoken to the council are forming alliances with several significant Milwaukee area organizations, including MCSAP, which is the Milwaukee County Substance Abuse Prevention Program, and working on a Partnership for Success grant, which is a component of that is to educate the community on the proper disposal of prescription drugs. And it's also working with local pharmacists to and physicians to reduce the amount of prescriptions for the opiates that are offered, because there's way too many in the community, and unfortunately our kids, you know, they locate these opiates, and we have some issues with that. We also have been working with the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth, the Planning Council of Milwaukee. One of the things that the Planning Council is doing with us is Franklin Public Schools is one of five school districts in the state as part of a four-year grant to introduce what's called ESPRT into the schools. And ESPRT is an acronym for Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment. It's a evidence-based program that's been used in clinical practice for years and even in private physicians' offices. It's a technique using what's called motivational interviewing to really discuss with the child their participation or lack of participation in alcohol or drug use. And in essence, what we know from the research on this is that kids who are really not involved and they're subjected to a series of interviewing questions tend to stay not involved because of that positive input from the interviewer. That, hey, keep it up. You know, that's great. You're making good decisions. And at the same time, we've also learned that individuals that do have some level of chemical abuse, just by getting that feedback from the physician or the counselor or the interviewer, tends to have them rethink their use. And oftentimes we see a reduction in their use for kids that are currently active. So there's some evidence and research behind that. We're hoping that over 4 years we're going to demonstrate that by simply administering a very short 5-6 question interview with the child, that we'll see a reduction in their use 4 years from now. We're going to start with the freshman class and kind of track them over the next 4 years. So those are some exciting things. I know I'm going over my time. One of the things that my colleagues are going to talk about is we're contemplating pursuing a very large grant for the drug-free community grant, which would, if we receive that, would bring $125,000 for 5 years into our community to do prevention work to keep our kids safe from drugs and alcohol.
Hi, I'm Darlene Collins, 8628 South 116th Street. 4 years ago, my 19-year-old son died because of drugs and specifically heroin. Almost immediately, I started sharing my son's story with youth. I also, shortly after that, joined FAPSU because I wanted to join in their mission to reduce substance abuse. I've had the opportunity to share Brian's story with students at the Franklin High School and at the Franklin Middle School a couple times and around our city and state. Most recently, I was one of the speakers at a large event that FAPSU organized and sponsored called Heroin in the Suburbs that we had at the high school, where we had 500 parents and students attend. A few weeks ago, a young man whom I don't know posted a message on my son's Facebook page, and I'd like to share a part of that with you, because this is why we do what we do in FAPSU. This young man said, he was talking to my son who passed, he said, "Brian, you were and always will be a beautiful son. I'm so sad you're gone. But I know one day we will all reunite, and it will be incredible. Your mom hosted a heroin recovery program at Franklin High School that I went to. I got clean a week later." Crazy how things that can be so bad can turn into things so great. Then I corresponded with him, and he just said further. He said, "But I just wanted you to know that you have a wonderful son who we all miss dearly, and the actions you are taking to show parents, children, and drug users is a huge deal. It's made an impact on so many lives that you don't even know about. So I wanted to say thank you for being so strong and spreading the word. You are an angel sent to us. Your message finally got me clean. I can't thank you enough." And so that's why FAPSU is here. That's one of the things we do. We try to save lives.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Darlene, for sharing that. So we've shared information about FAPSU with each of you tonight for several reasons. First, so that you know about us and the work that we're doing in the community, because success for FAPSU will contribute to the overall success and health and well-being of Franklin. We're requesting help from you as our elected officials this evening. Specifically, we are requesting continued city support for use of city buildings, including the library and city hall, dedicated staff time from our health department and our wonderful police department, and promotion of FAPSU in the city newsletter and on the website. We also request formal recognition as a partner of the city and common council representation at FAPSU meetings. In addition, we ask that council members provide recommendations for community stakeholders to be part of FAPSU. Is there anyone you'd like to see partner with us and come to the table to be with FAPSU for the betterment of the community? In addition to the requests we've made, we have a request of financial support as well. We are requesting financial support to hire a grant writer for a federal grant, as Mark alluded to. We approximate the cost to be anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000. In addition, we request support from the finance department as we apply for this grant and receive funding to become our fiscal agent. Lastly, we'd like to keep the council informed of our activities and would like to know the best way to communicate that information to you. So we'll take any questions that you have.
Before we do that, I'm going to look that way first. The work you folks do is tremendous. It's we can't say enough. And just to get the community to understand the risk in having your oxycodone that you got for your torn-up shoulder hanging around where it can be accessed by children, it's just tremendous. And somebody's got to do it, and we don't do it. So your work is excellent. Darlene, your story at the heroin in the suburbs thing was just compelling. And I don't think that the parents in the community understand the risks that are involved in all of this. There's a common misconception that heroin's like marijuana or cocaine. It's not. I'm telling you something. I'm inadequate to do that. But so the work you do is tremendous. Before we get to the council, the request is for dollars for a grant writer to write for this $125,000 grant, which will provide a person to act as their coordinator, and among other things. I've already spoken with Mr. Wooker, and Bill's going to find some money in his budget to do that. So without objection of the council, I've asked him to go ahead and do that. As for support of the finance department, that's a no-brainer. I'll make it happen. So, okay, comments from the council. Alderwoman Evans.
Well, welcome to the meeting, and I just want to say thank you for all you do. And I've been working with FAPSU 4 years. I try to attend the meetings when I can now. I was on the board at one time, and you're just a workhorse, the whole group. Going to one of your meetings, it's nonstop thinking about what you can do for the community. And the heroin in the suburbs at this, the Performing Arts Center was full of people of all ages, from senior citizens to middle schoolers and a few younger kids. And it was just compelling to sit there. It was just silence as all the speakers were up there. Darlene, especially, but it's a great message. It touches everyone in the community, and we need you in the community, and we need to expand the group. I know it's hard, everyone's busy, but we need to keep getting the message out, and I applaud you for everything you do. So thank you.
Thank you.
Should we be successful in this grant, the person to be hired would be housed in the health department and managed by Bill, although not an employee of the city. So, awesome. Alderman Wilhelm.
I was going to ask you before I learned the answer, if you had your 501c, it would be a C3, right? You were, if you were, would apply, it would have been a
C3? Yes. Correct.
Have you thought about doing that? Because it's not that difficult.
We have, and it is something that we will need to address should we be awarded the grant, and so we will address it at that point. Yes. What's that? It would be required.
It would be a requirement.
We have looked into it before, and the amount of work that went into it, we decided to table it for the time being.
I've had a lot of experience in that, so, you know, Darlene certainly knows my phone number, so she liked to call me up and ask me the process or contacts or attorneys to review the documents. There's several pro bono ones that will do that for you. Maybe even Fred Clements could do that. But I think it would be wise to get that sooner than later because of the tax, the benefit for your donors. It's a lot easier for them to take a tax write-off. You do have a little bit more reporting responsibilities, but it's not too bad, so I encourage that. So it's basically bylaws, articles of incorporation. Probably find some bylaws to model after someone else, and I've learned over the years things to do and not do with bylaws, so those are the things that I would be willing to share with you.
Sounds like a volunteer.
Thank you.
So I was actually going to their meetings, but my wife got pretty busy, so, but I do appreciate your work, and I'm here for you if I can help out.
Thank you.
And you do know a bit about grant writing.
Oh, yes. In fact, I was going to volunteer to help you write the grant because I used to do that for my career. So. But I'm not sure I can take that on. But I can certainly review it. I can give you lots of tips. So look for me for that.
Alderman Mayer.
First of all, Darlene, my sincere sympathies on your loss. In my regular job, I've met several mothers and fathers in the same situation over the last year. It is a tragedy of huge proportions these days. Yesterday, some of us were glued to the TV. Some of us watched it passively, but none of us could help but be pulled into the Super Bowl yesterday, where millionaires make billions of dollars for other millionaires and playing a game that they love. And the thing that bothers me in our society is so many people look up to those people as heroes when you four are the real heroes in our society. People like you who do what you're doing. You are the heroes. Thank you.
Well said, Alderman. Alderman Evans.
I also want to say our police department, they come to every meeting. They're always involved. They participate. They give input. They're just great. So thank you also.
Thank you.
They are great, especially after yesterday. Because Alderman Schmidt.
I would just like to ask how much of the hurdles that you deal with is it from parents that are in denial that not my youth, my son, my daughter wouldn't do it. Is that one of the biggest things that you have to contend with as trying to convince the youth that there are better things in life?
That's definitely, Janet's well aware, as well as our police department. It's it's an ambitious, pursuit. You run into some obstacles like that, the denial, minimization. I think there's also a sense of, embarrassment sometimes that comes along with that, where we still view addiction and mental illness sometimes in different ways than we do, physical illnesses, and maybe haven't come quite as far as a society as we need to address these openly. One of the things that we have been doing now for 2 years through some of our partners last year, Aurora, this year, through Bill Shockton Performance Enhancement Clinic, is offer a support group for parents. It's a free service. It's monthly at the public library. And, you know, last year there were anywhere from 7 to 10 people that would show up, you know, in the monthly meetings. And this year it's been a little tough getting, you know, getting people in again. But those are some of the obstacles that we hear, you know. And in essence, that's one of the biggest challenge of the mission, is to just really let people know that, you know, the norms are most kids don't get involved in addiction. You know, most kids, you know, get through high school and college, and you know, they might party a little bit, but they're not going to necessarily have a problem with substance use. You know, 30% or so will, and that's a significant number. You know, and unfortunately, a percentage of those pass away, you know, as you said.
I think it's kind of tragic too, looking at the statistics, that there is a percentage that at the middle school, you're talking about kids that are what, 12 to 14 years old, that are already dabbling in these kinds of experimental drugs. And is that evolving too, from your own peer pressure or just experimentation?
That really is where this starts, and we know just from the medical research around this that the, you know, the contemplative and pre-contemplation of using drugs actually starts around 6th, 7th, 8th grade. You know, sometimes kids from watching older siblings or their friends or just what they see once they get into the middle school setting. And again, you know, it's probably a lack of accurate information that kids have, so they can make, you know, healthy decisions about what they're going to do or not going to do, and around that use. So part of what we do is work with the families and staff at that level. I know we're connected with the police organization at the middle school here in Franklin. It may not be as obvious at that level with these young kids, so it's hard to, you know, kind of sound the alarm. But at the same time, I know that at our Heroin in the Suburbs program, Detective Cole, who presented, he's a narcotics detective from the Waukesha County Sheriff, you know, he made a comment to me on his way out that we really need to direct this to middle school age kids and their families, you know. So that's part of some of the things that we do talk about, how to do that without alarming people unnecessarily, but just to get people to recognize how serious, you know, this is. Kids don't usually just show up in high school and start using. Usually these kids, they've had some experience along the way.
Usually, we don't talk about my little Susie or Johnny wouldn't do that. Yeah. Well, what people don't understand is the nature of addiction, depending on where they are in the cycle, makes them master manipulators. And that's tough for a parent to realize it. So, with the council's permission, tomorrow evening we'll have a motion to appoint Alderman Wilhelm and Alderwoman Evans as representatives from the Alderman to the group. Go ahead, Bill.
I'll make that motion.
Tomorrow night?
I'll second that.
Tomorrow night?
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good. Well, thank you, and I'll work with Bill. We'll get that grant writer, and Kristen can help out with making sure that goes well.
I got one question.
Alderman Zandria.
Have you guys coordinated with any other groups in the greater Milwaukee area? Specifically, I know there's a fantastic group in the Brookfield Elm Grove area that you may want to coordinate with and work with, especially if you're looking at forming a 501, as well as they may have a grant writer on their program too. Okay, so I can get the gal's name that I know, and I've got your number on this brochure. I can get you that information as
great.
Well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your kind words and continued support. Thank you very much.
Thank
go
you.
Forth and do good work.
Thank you.
Keep Officer
you.
Wallace in line. You do have a reputation, you know, Gary.
A really good one, from what I
Okay.
Sure.
Mr. Mayor, we still need to vote. We still need to vote.
Item 5, discussion concerning consideration of possible comprehensive update or replacement of the City of Franklin Unified Development Ordinance, Mr. Deedle.
Thank you. I prepared that brief.
Hey, where are you guys going? You got to stick around. This is exciting. Oh, all right.
I provided the little, cover sheet and the list of top 20 changes that planning staff would like to make to the UDO. Willing and able to walk through them if you wish, or answer any questions. Just don't want to have us lose sight that, and I did receive a phone call from the woman Wilhelm today as well. Staff is very supportive of doing the comprehensive update. The council would prefer to make some changes, and that's okay as well. But I think I can say on behalf of the entire planning department that there's enough improvements that can be made to that ordinance that would be much more valuable to the city if we did a comprehensive update. I don't want to sugarcoat how much work that could involve, whether staff does it, a consultant does it, or a combination. It could be a substantial amount of work, but there are enough improvements that could be made. And like I mentioned in here, these are the top 20 ideas. We thought of 30, and that's not including, bigger picture, concept kind of thing, just having better definitions, more graphics. The improvements that we could make to the ordinance could be substantial. But I don't want to sugarcoat or underplay it. It would be a substantial amount of work.
Mr. Mayor, can I just ask quick question? I don't know if I understood what you said. You said the changes could be made or it could be redone, or wasn't sure what you said there.
I thought that one idea that the council might have been considering in the motion that they gave preparing the top 20 ideas is that the council might be thinking, well, we don't want to do a comprehensive update. We don't want staff to do a comprehensive update. But we might be open to fixing pieces or parts. And that's possible.
You're going to leave it open.
And then you mentioned that on behalf of the planning department, you had a side that you mentioned.
We've talked about this. If anybody's asking for our recommendation, we'd rather do the whole ordinance than just pieces.
In pieces?
Rather do the whole ordinance comprehensively.
Okay.
Still not set whether that would be throw it out, start from scratch, or try to use this as a framework and fix it up and beef it up. We hadn't made a final decision on that, but we had made a final staff decision that we'd prefer to do it comprehensively, look at the whole ordinance, because the difference would be piece by piece, we're directed to do this piece, and we'd only be looking at this piece. Comprehensively, I'd be looking at what are other communities doing for the entire ordinance. Because typically, these larger pieces, SIC codes, for instance, will have a ripple effect through so much of the zoning ordinance. And some of these standards, if we talk about zoning districts or lot sizes, that affects the land division ordinance and the zoning ordinance as well. Many of these will have ripple effects. Comprehensively, we'd be looking at entire ordinances, ideas from ordinances, all concurrently, so that we don't miss that ripple effect. As if we go through piece by piece, we'd say, let's fix the SIC codes. We miss that changes how the zoning districts work. Maybe we'd miss that. And all of a sudden, now we've created zoning districts that no longer make sense because very little is permitted in it. Or an excessive amount of uses with substantial neighborhood input or impacts are now permitted in residential or in neighborhood districts. So it can be done, and we'll do our best job to catch those ripple effects. But with a number of these as possible changes that the council could consider directing staff to do, and with what we believe at the staff level is the number of changes that could or should be made to make this ordinance better, it would be better to look at it comprehensively.
Okay.
But that would be a lot of work.
So let me give you an example just to kick this conversation off, one that Mr. Deedle and I are working on right now. A landowner in Alderwoman Mayer's district has an industrial building. It's zoned M1.
I believe it was.
It's got a friend who wants to move his roofing business into the building, but only as an office. We'll talk about this in planning. Only as an office. It's not permitted under the SIC codes in the M1 district. What? It's an office, but it isn't. But that man right there has no flexibility. And so what do we get? Well, that's stupid. Okay. So what can we do about it? Well, you got to do this, 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 and this. And then what comes out of that? We're difficult to deal with. This system is really broke. Let me give you another instance. In Alderman Mayer's district, actually right down from his house, nice apartment complex, getting a little long in the tooth, built in the 80s. They need to replace the pillars to their balconies. That requires appearance before the plan commission and a rule of the common council.
Special use amendment.
Why? That's why my opinion is, let's start it over again. Because fixing pieces, as Joel highlights, fix this piece, it's just like writing software. You fix that piece, and that piece breaks because there's some weird reference. But it's the common council's decision. You've got 20 in front of you of things that they would like to fix if you're in a fix mood, not a replace mood. So, you know, we're looking for direction.
So it kind of seems as though it's the SIC codes that have really bound everybody. And I go back to our favorite subject, Stella Chewy's, which was what I understood as we don't have room for that company here in Franklin, where in reality it was there's not one zoning district that allows a dog food company in the city of Franklin.
I think it's fair to say it was both, but okay. Yes.
Well,
right.
The SIC code would have, you wouldn't have had a question about where it was going to go because it's not allowed. So my question is, when the SIC codes were determined, number one, why was it that specific? Why did we go on that kind of a system? There must have been a reason for that, I guess, that people went through very specifically to say, we don't want a dog food company in the city of Franklin. I mean, I guess that's what my feeling is. There was a reason why it was put down that they didn't want that company, or not that company, but a dog food, cat food company in Franklin. So when you have something specific like that, so I'm trying to understand the reasoning for the SIC codes in the beginning, what the planning, head of planning, what their intentions were. I mean, all of this was approved by councils. Why? And I'm pulling out that because it's different than what you're talking about, Mr. Mayor, when you're saying, you know, the craziness of how it can happen to something different like a dog food company that nobody wanted a dog food company. That's the impression that I'm getting from that line on the SIC code.
Well, hit him first after me. To say that it was a positive choice to not have an SIC code reference to that specific use is equivalent to what we heard a couple of weeks ago. My experience, and I was on the council, actually my first meeting was the approval of this particular document. It was a vote I will forever regret. But you can't attribute a positive action to that. Those SIC codes, as you know from looking at the book, there's hundreds of them. And so all I'm suggesting is please don't attribute a positive action to something that's happening today where somebody consciously thought of it. I guarantee you none of them thought of it.
Well, it's listed specifically and no check marks all the way across. So they looked at it and specifically did not put a check mark in any of the zoning for the city of Franklin. That's different than what you're complaining about with, you know, having problems putting posts on,
right.
You know, trying to fix up a building. That's crazy. But what is specific about the dog food company? And I'm just picking on that, okay? So, because I'm trying to clarify that we're talking two different things.
Joel.
Two things. One is specifically in this, our UDO and the SIC codes, it was my understanding, I wasn't around, it was before my time, it was a very long project, took very long to finish. There may be debate and discussion and argument about whether it was ready. The staff, the person, the consultant working on it, told me that it was a draft still. It wasn't a final document when it was approved by the council. I've heard different stories or different explanations of that scenario, that situation as well. The reason that becomes important, I don't want to get into those details, the reason it becomes important is because there's 1,000 SIC codes. There's 30-some different zoning districts. And then somebody has to decide where to put those P's and those S's or to leave it blank. That was a lot of work. Whatever system we come up with is probably going to have a lot of similarities to that. We're still going to have zoning districts. We're still going to have P's and S's. And the question is are we going to have 1,000 SIC codes? Are we going to have 1,300 NAICS codes? Are we going to use one of the other alternative systems that are out there? Are we just going to use plain English to describe uses? But it's still a lot of different uses to decide whether it goes as a P or an S or not at all in the R1, the R2, the R3, or the R4, B1, B2, B3, B4. That's a lot of work to do. And to stay consistent, two things. The framework that this whole zoning classification scheme has, B1 is the kinds of uses that you would probably be okay with in your neighborhood, certainly across the street. We should keep that in mind every time we look at those SIC codes. And then the B2 would be possibly okay in your neighborhood, probably okay across the street, but obviously in the community with proper buffering and stuff. And B3 and B4 further away from people's homes. And that there's a whole continuum there that you should be keeping in mind when you're picking the P's and S's. But also, when you're looking at those P's and S's, it's not one SIC code for one use. It's one SIC code for a whole bunch of related uses. And they're not all apparent. So a dog food factory would be one example. Cat food factory. Horse food factory. Maybe it could get to some kind of use. I'm trying to think of a more lifelike scenario. Some kind of food that would be noxious in a neighborhood for some kind of animal. So clearly it's still a animal food company, but now it's making an animal food that is smell like a tannery. It has terrible smells. They don't have good controls over the odors yet. The federal government's still working on it because there's always things in the works still. And I give some references there. Green technology, nanotechnology. There are no regulations for that stuff yet. But if you try to put those in the code, you're guessing what those potential adverse impacts are, or it's something that's cutting edge, and we're not sure yet. So you're not going to pick up all of this. So you pick up what's most common, and you miss some of those either on accident or on purpose, because you can only spend so much time working on this stuff. So it's a combination, I believe, of all those factors that ends up with what we have today. It may not have been a final draft when it was ready to go. Clearly, there was 1,000 codes and 30-some zoning districts and P's and S's to put in all those. And then each one of those SIC codes has multiple uses that are allowed in there. Clearly, there's the SIC code, which comes from the federal government, has a list of examples. So somebody can look at that last list of examples and say, yeah, those all fit. But it doesn't list everything. There's a little bit of room for interpretation. Not a lot, but a little. So it's that whole combination that ends up with what we have today, plus it's old. So again, those examples, it doesn't cover green technology. It doesn't cover that aquaculture. We had to create a new SIC code for that. So when it gets old enough, it's going to be old and creaky too. So I want to be clear. I don't think the UDO is broken. I think the UDO is clunking along, you know, limping along. We can still work with it. We're able to review and approve projects, and sometimes we get compliments on how well the process went, but we don't get that often enough. We run into too many of these problems. When you have to do 50 amendments to your ordinance in less than 15 years, that's getting to be a lot. So it's those signs that it's old and needs to be fixed. That's where the debate, the discussion is, does that fix piecemeal? Does it fix comprehensively? Staff would say comprehensively, but it's not broken. So it's not, we don't have to throw it all out. But if we want to do more cutting edge things, if we want to make major changes, there's so much more than just the SIC codes. Variances. What's allowed is variances. Right now the UDO lists what variances there can be and no others. The variance process should be a relief valve for something that's unanticipated, not be a list of five or seven things that's all a variance could be for. Special uses that have no exterior changes. Why are we charging an additional fee and requiring additional information on the exterior of the property when they're making no changes to the exterior of the property? And we're charging a fee based on staff having to review the exterior of the property. Lots of changes like that all across the board. So it's getting old, it's getting clunky, it's limping along, but it's still working. But again, to the SIC codes, it's going to be a combination. Staff has to do a good job. Staff needs a second opinion. The committee that works on this, and when I say staff, it could be staff or consultant or a combination of both. That committee working on this has to take it serious, a second set of eyes. When something is this big, this complicated, you need somebody taking a second look at that work to make sure that we do a good job. And then when you bring it all to the public, honest input from the public, that's another set of eyes looking at this. They'll be looking at it from a different approach. You know, we'll be thinking about, you know, having rules and regulations that we can work with, that if they're violated, we can enforce. They'll be looking at is how does it affect my operations, my day-to-day life on my property, running my business. It's a whole other way to look at it. Sometimes we might not be doing a good enough job looking at it that way, but we need to look at it that way as well. So bringing that public input in is going to be critical too, to catch the things that staff, the consultant, and the committee might not catch. Doing proper, putting the resources, putting the time, and making it serious enough to honestly do all those steps, that will help guarantee, as much as you can guarantee, that this is a good ordinance when we're all done. And I think enough time has gone by that even if that was done when that UDO was first adopted, I think enough time has gone by, and the community changes. I can't forget that too. If we want to use somebody else's template, you don't use a community who's different than ours or going in a different direction than ours. We would not use a community or a community's ordinance that is landlocked and can't expand anymore. They have very little vacant developable land left. All they do is redevelopment. We don't want their ordinance. We don't want a town's ordinance. We don't want a village's ordinance. We want to use an ordinance from a community that can still grow like we can, because there's things that they've learned over time that would be applicable to us. So there's all those angles that have to be brought into this process. I keep thinking, and I explain this to my wife every once in a while, and her eyes glaze. So many things to consider, so complicated and confusing, yes, but it's done. It can be done. It has been done by other communities, and we can do it too.
Do you have a specific community that you would want to look at, or have you looked at any?
I have not in any great detail. I've glanced at a few only for particular things. So which ones appear to have used the same template that we did. Oak Creek, Grafton, Greenfield, I believe, probably used the same template that we did. I can call Pat Meehan and find out which communities he did ordinances for. That'll probably answer that. Other people have over the years referenced, well, I like this community, look at their ordinance. And again, that's one criteria that would be important. But another criteria would be, is that community heading in the same direction that we want to head in? If they are or appear to be, then that would be a more viable ordinance to look at. Again, would we want to use the ordinance from Kohler, Wisconsin? No. Would we want to use the zoning ordinance from somebody who's still growing as a suburb, maybe Middleton, possibly?
What about Brookfield?
Possibly Brookfield. And ideally, you do want to look as close to home as you can, because especially in other states, but even other parts of the state, the issues that they address can be different, and they'll reflect that differently in their code. Because remember, all these codes are living documents. There's not one magical template, or there's not like 12 different magical templates, and people pick which one they want, and then it's yours. It's a living document, just like ours is. 50 UDO text amendments might be excessive, but 10, 20, 30 over 20 years may not be excessive. So even if they did start with some template, the ordinance that we pick up to look at for a foundation or a basis or comparison will no longer match anyone's template. It'll be unique. And ours will be unique as well.
So you mentioned Oak Creek probably used the same template that we used. So they have the dog food company. So when they were doing the template, filling it in, they just made different choices than we did.
I'm not sure of the particulars of that situation. A couple ideas come to my mind. One is they had to do some kind of UDO text amendment to make it work, or they had some kind of catch-all category that they were able to throw it under. Or they allowed staff the administrative flexibility to interpret that it fits somewhere else. That's another thing that's unique to Franklin. Until recently, staff had very little authority to make final decisions on small changes or interpretations. The ordinance has some of that language in there, but practice did not allow staff to do that. You know, we've done UDO text amendments to clarify and specify that staff can make some of these calls, that applicants can give preliminary information to Plan Commission instead of final sets of plans. Some of those things either were written into Oak Creek's ordinance the first time around, or they've done UDO text amendments over the years, or they have that flexibility where they can make those calls and not have to go to a UDO text amendment every time.
So, Mr. Mayor, you said that it's in their business park? Is that what you said? So is this a company that you would propose, if the business park was there, to go in there? I'm just saying that because you said business park for Oak Creek. This is just a question.
Well, you set your own standards, of course. I think, and I've said it, I think Stella and Chewy's would be a great addition to Franklin as a corporate partner. They wouldn't meet the criteria in the business park because it's pure manufacturing. Probably not on the 27th Street one, but we haven't made that decision yet. But they would fit in our industrial park and possibly the new park on Loomis Road. But we haven't made that decision yet. But you mentioned using a template. I'm not sure that we want to use a template from a community who got their template from the same guy that did ours. That's just more of the same, I would think. It's my opinion. Alderman Willem.
Well, I've looked at a lot of ordinances. In fact, about 19 municipalities in some aspect. I've been to almost all the communities' council meetings or village trustee meetings or whatever. At some point, and there's so much boilerplate that's the same between communities. And, you know, Mayor, you said we got to fix it and throw it out. And regardless what you do, this is an ongoing thing. Things change, technology changes, business uses changes. We're not going to get away from this. You're not going to adopt the perfect ordinance. It's just not going to happen. So you can take the one you have and do a comprehensive update, as he said, or go out in search of a new one. I guess I don't have any big objections at this point to either idea, but in the meantime, we have to have something in place. And if we don't at least make some of the changes to the one we have in place, we're still going to be struggling for as long as it takes to put this new ordinance in place. So you almost have to do a combination of both. You're going to have to do some minor changes to hold you along until you find what you feel is the perfect ordinance for the day you adopt it. And then as soon as you adopt it, it's going to become start becoming obsolete again. I don't know. It's probably not the first time someone did some pillars or some change on the outside of the building. Somehow we got around it in the past, and we were able to do it.
Well, we were able to do it, but we didn't get around it.
Well, I'm just saying there was a way to make it happen. Did it have to be as painful? I don't know. I don't, probably take some researching on that. But is there an easier way to do it that still allows open government and public process? I have a little bit of concern with, just let all planning staff or engineer staff or whatever make these decisions without public knowledge, because there's a fine line between the open government process. And I think Joel understands that. And I think that, I'm comfortable enough with Joel and the staff that that if they feel, this might be cutting out the public process a little bit, that they would speak up and say that. That might not always be the case with all the planners you ever have. So be careful what you ask for. You might get one that right now allows for public input and helps you prevent a project that you really didn't want to have. And then all of a sudden you make it all loose and everything sounds great, and all of a sudden you find yourself up against a company who's saying you don't have anything in your ordinance to keep us out and it's something you don't want, and now you're fighting that battle. So remember the whole Walmart scenario and the square footage and all the changes we did on that, at that time. I wasn't part of that, but I can remember how that all went, and lawsuits being threatened. And so you want an ordinance that's going to be protective in some senses. So in my reading and research on this, I did find out that as far as a consultant, there was some, and Jesse would have to verify this, but there was some Supreme Court ruling that consultants have to have an attorney to write, so consultants are now not writing any more ordinances for municipalities because of the attorney involvement, for the most part, and that the writing has to be done by the city staff or must be done by an on-staff person or an attorney on staff. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But on the SIC code issue, there were several suggestions.
Wait.
What?
Let's finish that first, Mr. City Attorney. You aware of such a ruling?
Don't recall having seen that.
Do you have a citation or something?
I don't, but I could probably get that. Some Supreme Court ruling that
required
consultants.
Well, I'm hearing practicing law without a license, but I don't know that.
I do that every Tuesday.
Drafting an ordinance is necessarily practice of law.
Well,
if you could get the background behind that, please.
Well, that's it. That's if we decide to go with the consultant. That would be the time to do all the research on that, but I'm just saying that's something to consider.
I appreciate that, but we got it on the record now that something like that has been brought forward.
Right.
We need to support it or backtrack on it.
And I did say that this, I said in my research, I found this about Supreme Court ruling, and this would be something for the city attorney to address. I didn't say that I'm 100% correct or anything on the record, just to make that clear that I did refer to the city attorney, so don't be afraid.
All I'm asking is that you help him find it.
I said I would.
Okay. It's fine. It's all. Mr. City Attorney.
And consultants, when consultants do drafting, whether it's policy or ordinance format that is delivered to staff for their particular departmental expertise review before it comes to the council. Which, from recollection, and I did not attend every planning commission meeting back in the 90s, because I was told that I didn't have to be there. But my recollection, this is approximate, but I think the consultant was hired approximately 1994, and my further recollection is that unified development ordinance development process combining the prior zoning code and subdivision code took about 4 years. The ordinance was adopted in May.
Yeah, 97.
First half of 1998.
97, 98.
So that was about 4 years, and my recollection is that it was, if not at every meeting, very often in front of the plan commission, and that that was constant work for planning staff and engineering staff with the consultant, and that it was constantly in front of the plan commission, and there may have been subcommittees too. So when you ask how did this get there, it was a 4-year process. It was like the master, current master plan with a some time off around 2006, 2007. It was 2004, 2005, and then 7, 8, and 9. So there's 4 or 5 years, and that was a subcommittee of the plan commission, the entire plan commission. I'm remembering 40 some public informational meetings.
75 total if you count all the okay, Southwest.
So I think I had the floor and then I was interrupted. So
just answering the question. So.
Well, I think this was since the adoption of that, not, you know, it was more recent than that, if I recall. So it wasn't when. What
UDO was adopted in 1998.
No, I'm talking about the Supreme Court ruling. Oh. Didn't happen, you know, until. Okay. So anyway, sorry to bring that up. Next time I'll talk about city attorney before I question an issue. So the in relation to the SIC codes, there's a danger in being too simple. I kind of liked item C, and that was to use the list of real life businesses and types and land uses that are in the area, which is sort of what you've already talked about. If we think the number well, what we have in place now is a lot. The other SIC code, it's the North American industry. That's like 3 inches thick. It's more complex, and it actually cross references the code you use today. Correct?
No, there. It allows you to go back. So
right.
They ignore the SIC code, but they realize lots of people still use it, so they've created a bridge so people
right.
can go back and forth if they want to.
So it's not like it's smaller. It's actually no. bigger.
Although it does better than the SIC code does, it has those number of digits, has a level of information, so you could go the 3 digits or 4 digits, and that would be fewer distinct codes. More generic, and then if we went that direction, we would be recommending then that we use that more detailed information as a guide when things weren't clear where it fit. The staff could go to the more detailed 6-digit number to see for direction where something would fit.
I guess I'd like to know, and you don't have to answer this today, but who is using it? Who is using, you know, this larger North American industry? Who is using the other one? What communities seem to be, you know, having less problems? One thing Joel and I talked about on the phone, it doesn't matter where he goes to or talks to different planners, they all have issues with their codes. And if it's not one thing, it's another. It just depends on the community. So we're not unusual in this. So I guess my preference is for C, toss them in permitted uses and make the real-life businesses. Let's see, I didn't understand number three, which was wanting a new document for design, a separate document for citywide district standards, guidelines for architect layout and access. I don't know if we realize this, but we complain about the, how many pages is the UDO?
460.
And a majority of that is index, and then the definitions in the code. But I don't hear a lot of complaints about the municipal code, and that's probably older and thicker than the UDO. And there are actually things in the municipal code that contradict the UDO. But we don't seem to really have a problem with that. So
Alderman Wilhelm, pardon my interruption, but let's try to be organized about this. You offered a suggestion for to go with item C as the selected path for item one.
Mm-hmm.
Without taking a vote, any objections to that so that we can provide some direction to staff tomorrow night? I don't see anybody with heartburn on it. Okay. All right, so that'll be something for tomorrow night.
All right, and number three, like I said, I didn't understand placing it into a separate document because we already have two documents. I'm not sure three is the way to go, but maybe I'm just not informed enough about that. And then on number four, it's clarifying the difference between major and minor amendments for special uses. And which ones need site plans or not. I guess that would be worthwhile because we had that issue come up not too long ago. Update the NRPP. Clarify when mitigation is acceptable. I would think that you would want to always do mitigation if you're going to fill a wetland or take a resource, but I wouldn't. So when it's acceptable is, to me, not the clarification. It's when you don't need to do it at all. When do you not have to make up for a resource that you're taking from the public, I guess, is...
Mr. Deedle, would you clarify your clarification?
What we meant by that was if somebody's doing a natural resource special exception, is mitigation required? Make it clear. There have been instances where mitigation was not required by the council or the recommendation from environmental commission or staff. Make it clear right up front. Is it required or not?
Well, I know, and I've never really understood that either. I don't know why some people don't have to do it and others have to do massive amounts. It doesn't make sense to me. There's a standard in there. It's, you know, if you impact more than it's allowed, then you're supposed to do 1.5 to 1. And why some don't have to and some do is beyond me. Maybe there are some valid reasons, but... those valid reasons should be clarified.
Okay, so in the effort of moving things along, does anyone have a strong disagreement in that? I don't see any there, so that'll be part of the motion tomorrow night to move forward with five, right? Any objections? Okay.
On number five, eliminate the second consultant review. I didn't know we had a second consultant review. What does that mean?
If the applicant or property owner has their own consultant, prepare the information, complex, Hickory Grove had their own consultant through the Natural Resource Protection Plan. We required them to pay for an independent consultant to evaluate that work.
And I do have a problem with that for the fact that engineering consultant, the independent one, second one, we have no contract. That expired years ago. And I don't know how we're doing that. Well, I know, but it's on this piece of paper in front of me. So it's not off topic if there he wants to qualify, consider to qualify or a second consultant. I'm saying eliminate the second consultant. Well, first of all, we better determine if we have a second consultant and we have a contract. So I don't know about eliminate. It's a determination if we're even going to do that process. But I think it's actually a good process because, of course, our consultant kind of missed the fact that some things were different on the plan. So I don't know. Maybe we don't have the right consultants reviewing them. So I would, if we're going to use another oversight for that, I would like to use someone who's on board with what we want for the natural resource protections. And then
but the question here is not who, it is do we require a second look? That's the question. Not who, do we require a second look? And so the question is we want to have a second, do we want to require a second?
If you want my opinion, every time I've looked at one of these natural resources things, I can find things that are missed by both the second review and the other one. But that's, you know.
Well, but the question needs to be answered to give direction to staff. And, you know, this is one of those things where we get the reputation. So do we require a second consultant or not? That doesn't presuppose the question being should there be exceptions and ask for one. That's a whole different issue. With permission, Alderman Wilhelm, Alderman Mayor, question?
Sure.
Well, I would say that we would want to have a second consultant. We're a growing community. We're going to expand. And if we were somebody landlocked, like you had mentioned, I mean, that's something that we probably wouldn't need. But I think in Franklin's case, I think that this is something that we would need.
So allow me to play devil's advocate. What would that second consultant do? What's the purpose of it?
Verify calculations, because I have seen all kinds of times when I've had to cut little teeny acreage pieces and lay them out to find out that they say there's 52 acres on the site when there's only 48 acres on the site. So maybe some electronic submittals might help that, because we could pop them into a GIS and figure that out quicker. But
with you on that.
But that is who's going to do it. And what type of things do we want a consultant to do? So if we're going to have a second review, whether it's staff or a paid consultant, we need to put together what the consultant should look like. And since the contracts are expired, that'd be a good time to bring that up.
Well, I agree with what you just said, but you got to answer the first question first. Do you want a second consultant?
I think we both said yes, but we're only two people on the council. You asked two people.
So whoever makes the motion tomorrow night will have that, but let's not drag out the discussion.
Well, I just want to...
With permission from Alderman.
Sorry.
Is that right?
Sure. Why would you not want a second consultant?
I think as a blanket, you're required to get a second review. I think that's not necessarily appropriate. It adds that extra hurdle, that extra expense that we get the reputation for. I don't object to language in it saying that the city may require an independent contract.
But then you get the argument that you're treating people, some developers, different than them. They didn't have to do it and we did.
Well,
so
I'd rather have
that
argument than the argument that we're difficult to deal with.
Well, if they did it right, they wouldn't have to worry about that. If they weren't trying to get away with what I see some of the things they have tried to pass, maybe, you know, and I have a right to that opinion because I've seen it. For 15 years I've seen it. So I'm going to call it getting away with it. So I... and then you have... I didn't understand what a consultant certification process was, Joel.
So that was staff's idea. Nick and Orn in particular were very excited about that possibility. Establish the standards, the experience that a consultant would need to do a natural resource protection plan. Professional arborist, whatever the standards are. And then that's all they need. Then you don't need a second person. And then there'd be some kind of thing as a professional arborist, I hereby acknowledge that I've done this professionally and I put my name and reputation on this document.
Well, it doesn't necessarily work that well with wetland delineators, so I'm not sure it's all it's cracked up to be for this, but might be worth looking into, I suppose.
Alderman Wilhelm, I'm going to interrupt again. We've got a couple of items.
Well, if you wouldn't interrupt me every couple seconds, I could get by. I've been interrupted 10 times, you know?
Trying to move things along and offering a constructive suggestion. I don't object at all to you wanting to continue, but I'm suggesting that there's a lot of work here in just the three items that you want.
And if you think this is work, wait till we take on redoing the entire UDO.
I'm with you.
So you better get used to it, because we're talking about a year of probably going through that ordinance. I mean, I saw what we went through for 2.5 years on just the wetlands section. Jesse can tell you all about how much time you put into that. So I'm talking about a couple sentences and just trying to understand this, because what I'm reading here are not complete sentences, and I just need to understand what's here in front of me if I'm going to be making any motion. And maybe tomorrow, if you can't let me have my feedback or discussion on this in a manner that I'm comfortable with, I won't be ready to vote, which apparently you want a vote on all of this tomorrow. And this is an awful lot of material when we can't even get through a sentence.
Well, if I may, the reason for me to interrupt you was to suggest that perhaps we have enough at the moment to bite off so we don't bog down on other issues. But
that wasn't how you put it. Okay.
I don't know that I was allowed to put it. So that's my suggestion, and it's up to the common council on what you want.
Well, if you're going to do it that way, then I would suggest we stop at item 4 for tomorrow night and leave the natural resource issues alone, since we couldn't get through all of the sections, and the SIC codes alone are going to be quite a project.
I understand, which is why I suggested we stop at 5. You want to stop at 4? I'm happy with that. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there was some consensus on 5.
No, we didn't get through 5, and I have a lot of issues with 5. So I have no consensus on 5 at this point.
How about the rest of the common council?
4 is enough.
4 is.
Okay, so we'll stop at 4. That works. That's all I was trying to get to, and yet I got a lecture.
Well, I was given a packet of 20 items, and I spent a lot of time going through these 20 items, and we put it on the committee hall, and I thought that was my job. But had I known when I came in here I was only supposed to talk about a couple of them, I would have not tried to discuss the rest of them.
I certainly am not intending on any of this to be personal. The motion from the Common Council on December the 2nd was to return the 20 today. That's why you got 20. I'm just trying to take a bite out of this elephant a little bit at a time. That's all I'm trying to do. You want to go for the whole thing? I'll stay here all night. I don't care.
Well, then I would suggest...
But I'd certainly like to hear from other aldermen.
I would suggest that the next time this comes before this committee, for the Committee of the Whole, that they come on 4 items at a time then. And I was going to get to the point and suggest that staff should take the UDO and work at it at one chapter a month, not a chapter and approve it, but a chapter, get it where they think it's good, do the next chapter, and every time they do a chapter, they're going to find something they might have to go back and change in another. But in a year's time, they could have it completely finished if they did it that way. And it would be a comprehensive update, and they could bring us a chapter a month.
But I mean, they still need the policy from us on these items.
Well, if they bring forward a chapter a month and show us what they want changed, we can say the policy at that time. It'll be within the document that they bring forward to us. they'll say, this is what we want to change. And we'll say, yeah, we like that, or no, change it.
And I'm not
asking him to approve every chapter that way, but the chapters would come forward. Here's, you know, the chapter one, the first eight pages of it. Are we going in the right direction? We say yes or no. They go back and they finish it. Then when they get done with one, they set it aside. Then they go on to two and they do the same thing. So the council is only looking at a chapter a month. We're not totally approving it until they get it completely done. And then we compile it all together, public hearing, and do it that way.
Mr. Deagle.
And as we discussed earlier today, I believe that's a feasible way once we get into it. I don't believe we can start that way. I believe there's too many questions that are still unanswered. Two separate ordinances, one. Do we agree that we're going to use our current ordinance as the template, or are we going to look at another communities and try to find that? There's also other possibilities in terms of, are there parts of this UDO that we want to remove? Are there parts that we want to have separate? In my investigations of other communities, I might find something they have that's not in ours, and I might want to add that. I think if we try to jump to the chapter by chapter too soon, we'll miss all those opportunities. I think those things need to be discussed first, and as I had mentioned, create some kind of outline or structure, and then go chapter by chapter.
So you would like us to have a motion for you to create an outline that would help you move forward? Is that what would be helpful for tomorrow?
Yes. Although, yes, but that would be an amount of work that I'm not sure how long that would take. So once we could reach...
How about if we had that motion along with taking care of the zip codes?
And those we have talked about, we have investigated, that would be a substantial amount of work, more than just a month or two, just the SIC codes.
Okay, so if tomorrow we had a zip code motion... plus this outline draft that would come when you were ready with that, that would be workable for you.
Yeah, I have no problems with having dates to come back to the council and give a status report, mm-hmm. but I would not be able to say, would 3 months be enough? Would be 6 months be enough? I wouldn't be able to say that at this time.
Well, from what I read, there's a lot of these things on here, but they aren't as big a hurdles as the SIC codes are, that's a pretty big issue. So it makes sense to tackle that one because we seem to have the most problems with it, from what I've seen.
But I do like the mayor's analogy where if you fix one part, and I believe that fixing the SIC is a fix, my fear would be it doesn't fit very well with the zoning districts anymore. So I'm sure we'll point that out before we adopt anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be, still valuable. If we decide we like that SIC code, we understand staff has some concerns about how that fits into the zoning districts. So we'll hold in abeyance the adoption of this new SIC code. But now we've informed staff that at this point in time, we, the council, like it. That would be valuable. But I just want to give that warning that just if we do fix the SIC codes and open to the idea of doing a comprehensive revision, there's that possibility that things like the fit with the zoning districts might not be very good.
Well, Mr. Deal, mainly my job up here is a policy maker, but since I don't work directly with the SIC codes, I can't, and I'm not comfortable making a policy for you. I can approve a policy. I can look and review and be okay or not okay with the policy you bring me, but for me to create the policy is not something that I'm comfortable with based on the lack of my working with that at the level that you do. So I would be fine if you brought forward those issues, thinking most of the council members would, you know, feel the same way since they have the opportunity to vote it up or down. So if you have some good, solid ideas on how to fix the SIC code, and you have a suggested motion you would like us to see that would help you get there, that could help us move that along tomorrow, and I'm open to that. So maybe between now and tomorrow you might want to think about what motion might help you as far as staff, get the SIC code issue resolved, as well as getting the outline that you want to work on the ordinance for the UDO completely. And one thing I have wanted to throw in here is, if you do decide to bring forward a couple other communities' ordinances, I would suggest you completely remove the name of that community. Because I see it, I want to see it for the value of what the wording says. I don't really want to see it for, oh, that's so-and-so, and then the politics get involved, and we don't like that community because they're this way or that way. I'd like to see it for how well it's written, how easily it seems to that we can apply it, not politically, by city. Just my opinion.
All right, let me see if I can wrap the first item up. So my suggested motion tomorrow evening would be to direct staff to begin the process to update or replace the SIC system within the UDO by replacing the UDO's table of permitted and special uses with a list of real-life businesses, types, and land use descriptions, and prior to completion of that work, prepare and present to the Common Council a sample list of three or small number of examples for a small number of the zoning districts so that we can give you direction as to whether you're on track or off track.
Mr. Dietl. That doesn't appear to address looking at other communities' ordinances for an overall structure of the entire UDO zoning code subdivision?
Well, we're... It's unclear to me as to whether we want to move forward with fixing the 20 issues or fixing the UDO as a whole. This list concentrates on fixing the UDO that we currently have in place. Intermixed in this whole conversation was a different UDO. I didn't go there. And the reason I didn't go there is on December the 4th or whatever date that was, the council chose to go fix the issues rather than throw it out. So that's why I went to this, not comparing to other cities.
Okay.
Now that motion, I contend, says go, but here's a checkpoint for you. That's what I would suggest tomorrow.
What about the issue where you wanted this... to be able to put this, your list together? What's the list? What is it called?
Outline or structure?
Yeah, an outline structure that you want.
Of the UDO?
But then I would, sounds to me like I wouldn't be doing that at this point.
No, that's down the road when you're closer to fix. And that's more throwing it out than it is fixing. And I use this term fixing.
I think you should say, instead of throwing out, you should say replace, because we can't throw it out and have nothing. So replace is a better word.
So does that meet with the consensus approval of the Common Council?
SIC code?
That's what my intention was.
So just number one?
That was only number one.
And I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, with approval of Alderman Wilhelm, who still has the floor.
I'm done.
Thank you.
I give up the floor.
Can you just give a quick example right now of what replacing the P and S with a list of real-life business?
We'd still keep the P's and S's. So instead of having SIC code 5281, we would say grocery store. So that's what this list would be, grocery store, bank, those kinds of descriptions of uses. Doesn't the same thing as always, we'll be recommending, I can guarantee you staff will be recommending administrative authority to interpret with grocery stores. Does grocery store cover everything from Quick Mart on 27th Street to Walmart, a brand new Walmart? Staff will be recommending yes. To keep it simple, we're only going to say grocery store. We're not going to say grocery store under 40,000 square feet
We're not going to say that. We're going to say grocery store.
What does that do with the Walmart ordinance?
Alderman Wilhelm.
Everything that's been legally approved is grandfathered in.
Well, you can go ahead and recommend that. I'm going to add small, medium, or large.
Right.
You still have the floor, Alderman Mayor.
I guess that's good. But you know what? How would that fit in with my Stella Chewy's dog food thing, for example?
I'd have to look. Again, we'll be looking at examples of other communities to get ideas.
I think currently it just says dog and cat food.
I don't think we would get that specific. We'd have some business category.
You just don't like them. I'm going to get you a tour.
That's not true, and I would like a tour, but that's not true. I'm just...
Okay.
I haven't thought about that one. But it's not going to be as vague as food manufacturing. It's going to be more detailed than that. But I don't think we're going to say dog food manufacturer, cat food manufacturer, horse food manufacturer. We're not going to be that specific either. It'll be somewhere in the middle. I need to see examples of other communities how they've done it. And we'll probably, at the very least, discuss other options. One would be the administrative flexibility for staff for interpretations. Another one would be, are there guides that other communities use when you say, grocery store? Is there some document out there that somebody else uses that helps decide what is a grocery store? Whether it's some federal definition or a land use organization thing. I'll look for those kinds of documents as well. Because the SIC code, the UDO right now references the SIC code as adopted in 1987 and as may be updated from time to time. Having those kinds of opportunities in the ordinance for directing staff to look at some other document for further clarification and direction would be a bad idea. If anything like that exists.
Okay. So thanks for the explanation. The reality is let's get them started, and we can modify the direction, like large, medium, and small, as the process goes forward, because we're not going to solve all of this. Item two, establish more administrative flexibility. That would come along with what you're going to provide us for that. So item two will be part of item one. My view.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question?
I'm sorry, Alderman D'Andrea. A refreshing new voice.
If we do allow administrative flexibility or more administrative flexibility, we've just recently had a problem that occurred with a old drugstore that was all of a sudden administratively allowed to allow a discount store to go into it. Not that it was bad, I read comments about it, but it was against the direction that we're trying to look at in a perceived area. This will only exacerbate that, possibly.
Potentially.
Correct?
I agree that's true. But give the specific example you discussed tonight. Well, we had a concept review tonight because of that. Well, I don't want to say that on the record. But we had a concept review of the same situation where now's the time to get some input. We have to. The problem we get into is we're either too strict or not strict enough. And let's be fair to the staff. They need to have a little direction as to what's good and what isn't. I mean, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And on that particular instance, Joel didn't like me in his office. But what was I going to say? What did I say? I said, well, it's what the law is. Sorry. Okay. But at least give me a chance. So we got our chance tonight. So we'll work through all of that. You're right, but we got to work through all of it.
Okay, just so staff has an understanding.
Right now, we're handcuffed.
If there's something that of question, or, at least bring it to the attention of the alderman and the mayor so we have, at least can have our two cents worth. And no, I'll have to commend you. Yes, I appreciated the Root River Project coming to us in a common, you know, committee of the whole, because that's the way it should be done.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate here for a second. Why? It's a bowling alley going into a bowling alley. Now, Mr. Dave, I forgot his last
Church.
Name.
Church.
Church could have sat here and said, why am I here? It's a bowling alley. I want to just redo the bowling alley. Why am I sitting in front of the Common Council? That's the kind of thing that we have to come to grips with. And I'm pedaling as fast as I can to get working on this. I appreciate tonight's conversation, but we got to figure it out. And that's for the seven of us to figure out and give them their parameters and marching orders. So that's what we're doing.
Well, it's unfortunate because what happens is we all get the phone calls of what's happened or what's going on. And I don't know. Haven't heard anything. Staff just approved it. So so then we get the whiplash. Then we get the, you know, the feedback.
Okay. Well, let me just say on that one, we all learned a lot of lessons, didn't we, Joel?
Because
I didn't hear about it.
It does bring up another issue, though. The way the process is set now, we recommend and we encourage the applicant always. Now, we're human. We could forget. We could forget. But I listen to staff as often as I can when they're meeting with applicants or when they're on the phone, and rarely do I hear them miss this. Please also talk to the alderperson and the mayor. That's consistent standard operating procedure when we talk to anybody proposing to do a project, specifically including that one. If they choose not to do that, we need, if that's important enough to the council, it has to be added to the UDO.
Mr. Danders still has the floor.
I'm all in favor of expediting processes to make it work for the community and for the business owner. I'm just concerned that, you know, that we will not lose control, the elected officials, of this process either.
And my comment plays directly into that, because there already is a ordinance or resolution or something that says staff will inform the alderman. And that's not been always followed.
We do. Whenever there is an application, concept review, site plan, rezoning, we get those materials to the alderman as soon as anything goes out. When a project comes in for staff review, we give a copy of that to the older person of the district. Even when it's across the street from their district, we have a routing slip. We electronically send to all the aldermen.
Let's not get afoul of open meetings, okay?
It seems like sometimes the communication is, and maybe your department just gets really busy and you kind of forget about us, but believe me, when it happens, we don't forget about you.
I assure every alderman up here that the planning staff does not forget about you. Alderman Mayor.
Well, I just have one question. There's a situation that's going on in my district now on 92nd and Highway 100. And the only reason I knew about it was because I was getting phone calls from the residents saying that, hey, there's a bunch of surveying people out doing all kinds of work, wetland delineations, marking trees all over the place and that kind of thing. So I called, and that's when I found out that all of the stuff was going on. There wasn't an actual application in yet. So at what point does staff actually tell the alderman what's going on?
So again, we had a meeting with, we had one meeting and one or two phone calls with those people. All three times we told them to talk to the older person. But they hadn't given us anything yet. So they didn't leave anything behind. They did show us, at the meeting, they did show us some things. But two phone calls, I believe, and then one meeting. Phone calls, we usually don't say anything unless we know it's something big. And they let us. Sometimes when they call us and ask for confidentiality, we give it to them. If they're not going to leave anything behind, they're only asking questions, that's very common. Now, that's a valid question, too. to be business friendly. When they ask for confidentiality, we give it to them. If they leave nothing behind, we'll still tell them, I recommend, and the best example is the Meyer. Meyer met with us, I believe, I'm not sure about the timing, but I was telling them to talk to the older person and the mayor, and they weren't saying yes. So I don't know if they had. And they were asking for confidentiality.
Why can't the alderman be part of the confidentiality? That's ridiculous.
Well, maybe not the mayor.
We're getting way off topic here. But the reality is it's their decision, not ours. And I'd hate to put us in a position of saying you must, because you're a business owner. I'm not talking to them if I don't want to. I'm walking to see you. But I understand your frustration. People do this stuff on their property all the time. And I get the calls too. I mean, I'm sitting in the middle of the chair. Everybody thinks that I'm the super alderman. I'm not, but they expect me to know about this stuff. So can we move to the next item?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Dan. So item two is going to be part of item one, and mm-hmm. we'll deal with that. Establish citywide or direct district-wide design standards and guidelines. I think that ought to hold.
Yeah.
I think that ought to wait. That's a lot of work.
Place.
And that's going to be
spend a lot of time.
It's
going to
be
talking.
Seven different arguments. So, and then item four. That's a little slightly different. That's my issue of. But Joel, you can accomplish item four.
We have ideas already. The only thing we need to do is the ripple effect ramifications. If we would make the changes that we're thinking of, does it affect anything else? But we've already sketched out in our own minds what changes we'd like to make. It also inquires or would require opening up the fee ordinance to adjust the fees.
Is that a revenue issue? Because I want to make sure that, while we're trying to make it easier, we're not impacting our revenue as well. So I don't know if that's originally why this was set up. I'm not saying it's right to set it up that way, but that might be why it was done.
I can't imagine that we get much revenue off of that, but that'll be part of the report. This is a standalone item, I think. Can you do this on top of the other stuff?
As long as it's no set deadline or nothing too soon.
All right, so the motion for item two, I would suggest, is to direct staff to include that particular item in the item one project. That would be item two. We would not do anything on item three. Item four would be direct staff to return with suggested changes as soon as possible. Any issues there?
And I have no problem giving a status report if it's taking too long.
Okay. Any issues with that? And that's where we decided to stop, unless you want to do five.
You want to put as soon as possible, or do you want to put the first meeting in June?
Well, the big project is one.
Correct.
Item four is going to be as time permits and if we get no other development activity. So,
Joel, how long do you think item one is going to take you? 4 or 5 months? 6 months? With
average amount of workload, I would say half a year.
Okay, so what? Give us this update?
September.
Okay. Just so we have an idea.
I'm okay with that. Any objections?
Everybody else fine?
You want to do five or no?
Let it lay.
We
want it done right.
Okay. Anything else on this particular item? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.